Can I be honest for a second? A lot of people who listen to this podcast already know they want to quit porn. That's not the problem. The problem is doing it consistently, when no one's watching, when it's difficult, when it's late, when you're stressed. Instead of just relying on willpower, rely on our friends at Relay. Relay gives you structure, tools, support, connection. So you're not fighting alone and starting over every week. If that sounds like what you've been missing, check it out at ftnd.org/joinrelay.
Struggling with compulsive sexual behavior or betrayal trauma can feel isolating, not just for individuals, but for partners and families too. But healing is possible, and you don't have to navigate it alone. From June 25th through the 27th in Nashville, Tennessee, the Hope for Healing Conference brings together individuals in recovery, partners, couples, and professionals for 3 days of expert insights, meaningful conversations, and real connection. You'll hear from experienced voices in the field, gain practical tools for healing, and connect with others who understand what this journey can look like. Whether you're seeking support personally or professionally, this space is designed to meet you where you are. To learn more or register, visit csbdhopeforhealing.org and use code PODCAST25 for 25% off.
Here at Fight the New Drug, we talk a lot about the impact pornography can have on mental health, relationships, sexual health, and the world around us. And if you've felt that impact personally, it's important to know this. You're not alone. That's why Relay exists. Relay is an app designed to give you real support as you work toward lasting change. It connects you with a small, private group of people who understand what you're going through, people who show up when it matters. Relay isn't about shame or judgment. It's about accountability, encouragement, and learning how to move forward together. And if anonymity matters to you, Relay has you covered. No names, just support. If you're ready to stop doing this alone, try Relay for free today at ftnd.org/joinrelay.
Hey listeners, you're invited to the club. Fighter Club, that is. If you're looking for a way to become a more active part of this movement, consider joining Fighter Club. For as little as $10 a month, you can create a real impact by supporting our efforts to educate and raise awareness on the harms of porn. Plus, by joining, you can get insider info, 30% off all Fight the New Drugs conversation starting gear, access to our secret store, and an exclusive Fighter Club kit sent to you when you sign up. Join Fighter Club today at ftnd.org/FC. That's ftnd.org/FC. See you in the club.
My name is Garrett Johnson, and you're listening to Consider Before Consuming, a podcast by Fight the New Drug. And in case you're new here, Fight the New Drug is a non-religious and non-legislative organization that exists to provide individuals the opportunity to make an informed decision regarding pornography by raising awareness on its harmful effects using only science, facts, and personal accounts. We want these conversations to be educational, uplifting, and hopeful as we sit down with experts, influencers, activists, and people with personal accounts. We cover a wide variety of topics that may be triggering to some. You can refer to the episode notes for a specific trigger warning. Listener discretion is advised. Today's episode is unique because we're sharing our favorite clips from the episodes we've published during 2021. The lineup includes award-winning journalists, former porn performers, and even sex therapists. With that being said, we hope you enjoy this episode of Consider Before Consuming. Episode 35, Nicholas Kristof, award-winning journalist and political commentator.
I sort of been following the Pornhub. I was aware of it, but I didn't really know what to think of it. And then asked some people, then went online, and some of the first images that I saw were of unconscious women who were being stripped and raped, and the rapists, to prove that they were unconscious, were touching their eyeballs to show that these women were, drugged out, drunk. I don't know what it was. I just, you know, you look at this unconscious woman being raped and a company, a major internet company is monetizing that. And you think about what that does to those women when they find out that this rape, I mean, they're not only brutalized for half an hour or somewhere, they're brutalized for the rest of their lives for all to see.
Episode 36, Adam LaRoche, former MLB player and founder of E3.
The place she was being trafficked, she was 14, and the place she was getting being trafficked out of, she remembers one time she was in the basement with some other girls, and she remembers one time going up to the third floor of this house in a decent neighborhood that nobody, you would never suspect that this is going on. And somehow she got up to the third floor. Of course, they've got drugs in all of them. And she remembers seeing another younger girl that she had seen at the basement level in a studio upstairs, the third floor of this house. And it was evident as soon as she walked in that this is where they film porn. So not only are they linked like financially, or I mean, these were linked in the same house. They were trafficking girls out in the basement. Men can come in and taking these same girls, and however they would choose how to do that would take them to the third floor and continue to make money off of them.
Episode 37, Lynn, athlete, activist, and recovering porn addict.
And so I found that pornography would let me forget and feel something other than that sadness and hopelessness for just a second, and then that depression, anxiety, and lack of energy would swing back more intense than before I watched it. It would kind of sink you deeper because you felt the guilt and the shame on top of your depression, anxiety. So I was already battling that stuff, but I think the pornography addiction just made it tenfold, kind of like way more than I was originally planning on battling. And I remember when I finally was able to open up to people about it and kind of do research on it, I'm like, wow, this is a big issue. Like, this is something that is like your name is Fight the New Drug. Like, this is a drug. It is something that needs to be discussed.
Episode 38, Eddie Caparucci, PhD, counselor, coach, and sex addiction therapist.
So many of my clients, one of the things they'll say is, I don't really have friends. And when you ask them, well, what do? And they'll say, well, I ride a bike or I play video games. And again, they're not living life to the fullest. And if you're not living life to the fullest, how are you going to live? How are you going to have a relationship that is rich and robust? And that is to the fullest. You're looking at the antidote for all of this. It is true connections. If you can develop that solid emotional bond with people, you know what? You don't need the rest of this. But the problem is nobody showed most of these folks how to do that. They don't know how to do a relationship. And what I mean by do a relationship, they don't know how to cultivate it, how to feed it, how to make it come alive. You're just walking through it.
Episode 39, Catherine Lee, anti-trafficking advocate and founder of the Pure Hope Foundation.
Because that's what these guys are preying on, is a woman and a young girl in particular not having a sense of her worth and identity. And I challenged him on that. I actually said to him, can I challenge you on something? And I really believed at that moment I had earned the right to be heard. You know, I listened and I, you know, was gathering information and facts and perspective from him. And I believe I earned the right to be heard because he said yes. You know, when I said, can I challenge you on something? And I said, and I'm just curious, I hear you've justified what you do, but I'm just curious if ever in the middle of the night, like 3 a.m., when you're not fully into the frontal lobe of your brain, right, which is the part of our brain that justifies and the executive function of our brain. I said, I'm just curious if ever in the middle of the night, like at 3 a.m., if your hero's heart ever rises up on behalf of these young women. And for the first time, Mr. Charisma couldn't say a word.
Episode 40, Dr. Kim Farrington, activist and sexual assault physician.
I have been someone who's become very passionate about the impact of pornography on what we're seeing. And it really began probably about 8 to 10 years ago, I suppose. We just kind of started commenting to each other, as particularly in our younger and our teenage patients, you know, as colleagues, we would just start to comment, is what you're seeing changing? We're seeing more anal assaults, say, the types of assaults was changing. And that's really why I reached out to Fight the New Drug and to Consider Before Consuming, because we were looking to find out, okay, what's behind this kind of progressive change? And it hasn't just been the change in the types of assaults, it's also how the younger females in particular, how they respond to it too, or perhaps what they think is okay.
Episode 41, Barbie, anti-abuse activist and child sexual abuse survivor.
What he did was his choice. It wasn't my choice. I didn't choose to see pornography. I didn't choose for him to touch me. I didn't choose any of that. So that's when I knew. And I forgave him. And it took me another maybe 6 months after forgiving him to actually
Get the courage to.
I didn't know how to tell. It just wasn't something you talked about. You just didn't talk about it. And if someone said something, it was like that was the end of the conversation. There was no chatter about it after that. It was done. And I didn't know how. I didn't know who to tell. I didn't know who to go to. I didn't know if they would believe me. It was easier for me just to know and no one else to know. And I'll be okay. And that's the end. But I didn't know. I just felt like my parents, it was almost became a burden that I couldn't do on my own anymore.
Episode 42, what's going on with Pornhub?
So just as a nutshell, Garrett, I mean, over the course of these hearings that we're talking about with the ethics committee, the scope of the situation was revealed in its true entirety. It's becoming clear that the world's largest porn company that claims to care about victims of child sexual abuse material and non-consensual content, they reportedly only very, very recently put basic safeguards in place. And these new basic safeguards were put in place not because of the multitudes of victims of image-based abuse and trafficking and child exploitation. These safeguards were not put in place because they begged for the videos and images of their exploitation to be removed, but reportedly because Pornhub wanted to protect their financial successes and preserve their bottom line.
Yeah.
That's what these ethics committee meetings have really revealed at the heart of it.
Right.
And I don't think that that's a point that should be missed or skated over. That's right. Exactly what was revealed. It wasn't enough for the exploitation survivors to speak out. It wasn't enough for advocates to demand change. It had to be about their bottom line.
Episode 43, Joshua Broom, former performer and anti-porn activist.
I did that one film. I signed a contract with that agent. And that agent just happened to be, you know, he only represented a handful of guys, and it was the biggest industry. It was the biggest agency in the United States, and one film turned into, I did, I think, 150 that first year, and then every year after that, I did well over 200, and then, you know, after 5 years, I'd been nominated for, you know, best male porn star, and I've won it one time and won all these awards and traveled all over the world, and I'd done 1,000 movies, and I was all over Showtime and HBO, and there were sex shops that I had, you know, my pictures were all over toys and movies and covers of things and on billboards in Vegas and all this stuff. And all of a sudden I'd somehow become one of the top 5 male porn stars in the world.
Episode 44, Theodosia, former performer.
Well, okay. Well, we're going to have to go back to something, because I think that I mentioned to you that, because I, from a young age, I did not enjoy, either being identified by others or experiencing the state of victimhood. Okay. I don't like it. I rejected it completely. Even if it was accurate, I didn't like it. I wanted nothing to do with it. And because I also didn't like any kind of experiences of being powerless in any way, I hated that. I hated having absolutely no say as a kid over anything I could do, especially again in like situations of law enforcement. So I created indeed like this mental stratagem, if you will, from again from like 14, 15, okay, of like consent doesn't exist, therefore I cannot be violated. And so I cannot speak to what other performers were doing or other, you know, just people involved in the industry, like where they are with this question. And I think if anything, sometimes even the conversation around consent has gotten a little neurotic.
Episode 45, Joe Robertson, sex therapist and betrayal trauma specialist.
You know, I think there's a lot of what can be parent bashing, which is like, why don't you do this? And why didn't you even think about this? And why aren't you taking control? And I just feel a lot of empathy for parents. I'm one myself, and I know how hard these conversations can be and how awkward we can feel about them and wanting to do it right. And that can be quite paralyzing. But we really do need to. And I think at some point we have to decide whether we want to answer our kids' questions or we'll leave it up to Google. Because Google will always answer their questions and it will answer it with a video. And so there's kind of two elements to the conversation. There's the kind of wider sexuality, sex conversation, and then the porn specific one. I generally say to have that conversation with boys around 10 and then girls around 12. And that's just based on the data, because we know that kids are seeing porn much earlier than they were in the past.
Episode 46, Garrett Johnson, podcast host and recovered compulsive porn consumer.
I think that part of the problem with compulsive behaviors is that usually they grow in secrecy.
Mm-hmm.
There's that tendency of secrecy.
Right.
So I think that being open about it could have really helped me.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it could have eliminated my shame.
Yeah.
And I think what it really comes down to is that I could have finally accepted myself for myself. Because if I'm hiding this thing, I'm not only not allowing her to accept me because I'm lacking the openness,
mm-hmm.
but I'm also not allowing myself. I'm not accepting myself because I'm trying to hide this thing. And so I think having that conversation beforehand and during our relationship ongoing could have been very helpful,
yeah.
and very healthy. Because she didn't know about my porn consumption, and we went through about 5.5 years of marriage without her knowing mm-hmm. that I was consuming porn. And I'm like, I'm not proud to say that.
Episode 47, Alia, child sex trafficking survivor, former performer, and advocate.
And there's another key point in that that I think was really important to my development. And that was that my mom was actually an adult print model. And so I had another set of exposure to pornographic images because of that. And growing up, my mom had been a centerfold for one of Larry Flynn's magazines, which was a big print hustler type thing. And she had like a life-size print of one of her centerfold photos hanging above her bed. And so that I also, not only was I sexually abused, but I was also raised by somebody that had a really high view of pornography at that point in her life. Things have changed a lot since then. But as like a very young mom, that was something that she idealized as well. So because I was raised in this environment and then coupled with the sexual abuse, those things, they spoke into each other. They were messages from two different places that were telling me the same thing. Both the pornographic images that I was seeing of my mother and the way that she carried herself and the way that she spoke so highly of her experiences, along with my abuser, who was telling me that this is what sexuality is. This is what Sexual touch is what love looks like. Specifically, like forced sexual touch is what love looks like. And that these women in these magazines, or in the case of the sexual abuse that I was seeing, these underage girls that I was seeing in photographs and things like that, that this is really where someone would peak in life, that these were good things. These were things that were to be idolized and idealized.
Episode 48, Philip Martin, award-winning GBH News investigative journalist.
But as you pointed out, Garrett, there's another aspect of this as well, that which is rarely talked about, which is the exploitation of boys. Now, we hear about the super exploitation of children, this grotesque practice by some men around the world who basically engage in child pornography and worse, of the rape and abuse of children. Much of this is connected to something that occurs later, which is essentially buying boys and teenagers for money or to allow them to survive, something that's called survival sex. And these things are connected to one another. So that is essentially what commercial sexual exploitation is. It manifests in forms of, it manifests as trafficking, sex trafficking.
Episode 49, Matthias J. Barker, licensed therapist and public figure.
Give yourself a little bit of grace here, that we don't have a map for how to navigate this thing yet. This is different than Playboy magazines. This is different than, like, when broadband internet hit 2010, the whole domain changed. And so you are pioneering how to figure this out for your kids and their kids and and generations onward. You are pioneering how to figure this out for other couples in your community and for other friends. Like, give yourself some grace. This is anything but simple. And so if you're feeling especially discouraged because you've been trying to figure this out for several years, it might take you a long, long time, because there's no roadmap that even comes close to the kind of access, to the kind of variety, to the kind of potency that this drug is imposing on our culture. And it's poison. So be careful and give yourself some grace as you're navigating it, because this is part of living in this time.
Episode 50, Christian, founder of 1924 US and recovering porn addict.
So I get all that stuff, but the intent of pornography is really where the problem lies. And so, in my opinion, the commodification of people should never exist. And we're doing that, and people try to, you know, traditionalize it by saying, oh, it's been around for thousands of years and blah, 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 blah. But the truth is it's nothing is as accessible as pornography.
Yeah.
And if pornography, its intention is the commodification of humans, whereas like television and, you know, video games and all this stuff have those negative effects, whatever, sure. It's more about the user that it, you know, negatively implicates. Whereas with pornography, it's not just the user, it's actually the people on the other side as well. And the fact that the product is free. So there's a lot of different assets coming at it, you know, from different perspectives where you're like, oh, this is wrong from that perspective and from this perspective and from that perspective. And you can kind of see, you know, it's not just, oh, I use porn and I'm addicted and no one else can get addicted and, you know, everyone's consenting online and it's all good and fun and, you know, it's free. It's actually like, it's crazy how unregulated and how available pornography is, and how obviously all these new studies are coming out about pornography and its effects, especially on children.
Episode 51, Alan Smith, executive director at Saving Innocence and anti-trafficking advocate.
In 2016, all of the decision makers in LA County got together and sort of said out loud, wait, these kids are victims, not criminals. So therefore, when they say that, they're compelled to treat them as such. And so an entire countywide protocol was constructed and created at that time, where when law enforcement, which is normally the point of, first point of contact, recovers, identifies what appears to be a child victim of sex trafficking, then they call a service provider, and that's us. And so that's our rock star case managers are on call 24/7 and show up in the middle of the night and step into that relationship with that child and, you know, take her from there and help her get what she needs, safety, tangible items that she needs. And then we walk with her as long as it takes to help her get her childhood back and back on her feet.
Wow.
So that's what that protocol is. It's pretty awesome.
Episode 52, Caitlin Blotsky, recovering porn consumer.
What advice would you have for someone who is there and still struggling?
Yeah. First, I think anyone that's struggling needs to know that they're not alone, because that's what kept me silent for so long. But they also need to know that it's not impossible. But pornography, I think people have a stigma that if you watch it or you're struggling with it, that you're just a gross person or that you're dirty. And that's not true. It's a heart problem. It doesn't mean that you're a bad person. And so I personally feel like they should know that telling someone it's okay, and it's going to make it a lot more, it's just going to make it a lot better. The transition, just to tell someone you trust, but also just to take practical steps. Like for me, I had to get rid of my laptop for a while, which is really inconvenient for school. But sometimes you have to take really dramatic steps, and I had to keep my phone in the kitchen for a while. But there's nothing wrong with taking dramatic steps to help you mentally and physically.
Episode 53, Christy Wells, CEO and co-founder of Safe House Project.
So 66% of trafficked individuals are trafficked by somebody they know and trust, you know, including that 40% of familial trafficking. And the way that the traffickers hold them captive is not chains or metal links, but it's trauma bonding. It's convincing them that they are loved, that they are going to be taken care of, that this is normal, that this is, you know, what their bodies are intended to be used for. Whatever the lie is that they tell them, they use trauma bonding tactics to keep the trafficking victim from ever speaking out, from ever saying that they need help. And that person feels like they are completely enslaved. And survivors tell us all the time that shame was the thing that held them captive more than anything else.
Episode 54, Ashlyn Mitchell, betrayal trauma coach and advocate.
And do we know what betrayal trauma is? A lot of us have never even heard. I'd never heard it. Yeah. When I was the cow and really just trying to numb, I really took on everything. So this must be my fault that my former partner is choosing these things. It must be my fault that I'm angry and acting this way. And I didn't understand why I was showing up the way I was, but I did choose to be really angry and name call and bring up the past in closed doors.
Do you think it was a subconscious decision?
Yes, because the crazy thing is we are not taught to act this way. And yet how many of us show up this way? Most all of us. And we all show up in this pain and we will yell and scream and do things that are not us and leave the room and go, what did I just do? This is not me. So I feel like that being in that response, I was not choosing to be me. And I didn't even realize it. I just was confused and didn't know why I was showing up the way I was.
Episode 55, Deanna Lynn, author and former performer.
Well, so one, pornography continued to be a part of my household. Like the movies were constantly in the house. You know, even though like CPS had come and removed him when my mom was alive a few times, we still knew where the stash was. And so that right there was telling me like, this is an acceptable part of culture. Plus I grew up in a time, you know, I was born in the 80s. And so I feel like that might've been like a real big boom for the industry, because I remember like XXX rated movie theaters and stuff like that around. My sister was dancing in a club. She was 4 years older than me. I'm sorry, stripping. I like to call things what they actually are. She was stripping in a club.
Yeah.
And so I kind of looked to her as like an idea of womanhood, and the people in our high school and junior high, like they would call me names, and I was just like, man, this must be like the only thing I'm good for. And without that lack of guidance, it was like I felt like I was pushed into becoming sexualized, and that seemed to be the only way I could get people's attention. And so I went to some extreme measures just for somebody to notice me.
Episode 56, Drew Boa, recovered compulsive porn consumer and founder of Husband Material.
I remember sitting on Rebecca's couch. I couldn't look her in the eyes. My stomach was tight. And I can be a slow talker. It took me a long time to get the words out. Eventually, I looked up and I said, I'm not as free from porn as you might think. And in that moment, she gave me such empathy and kindness and tenderness that something changed within me. And I knew that if I'm going to marry this person, if I'm going to commit to her, I need to be 100% confident that porn is in the past. At that time, I had had over a year of freedom in the past, but I had that recent relapse right before we started dating. And I had to tell her about that. And that is when my journey got a lot deeper. That's when I started researching. That's when I started training and reading as much as I could. And that's what took me back to my childhood. And that's when...
Episode 57, Jennifer Nielsen, child sexual abuse survivor and CEO of The Dig.
The person that I was wasn't that person. But now my voice, the way I respond, the way I operate in the world is very different. And I had to fight for that. I had to work for that. And just like anything that we work for in our lives, the more we invest and the more we work, the more power and meaning that it has. And so that's something now that you can never take from me. And I want to give that to other people. And it's not just those who've had sexual abuse in their lives. And that's something I really want to speak to is pain is pain. And trauma comes in all shapes and sizes, divorce, death, illness. Everyone has experienced pain where none of us are exempt, but all of us have the same power to choose to work through that, to have hope and to have possibility, and to expand and become the people that we want to be, regardless of what's happened to us. And so that's where I just get so excited because I see that in people, and even those that come in and feel like they're not repairable. Like, I've had people say those kind of things to me, and that it just isn't so. It just isn't true. Everyone has the ability to heal, to grow, and to become powerful.
Episode 58, Paris Bareilles, actress, model, and anti-trafficking advocate.
I remember I read something that said, you know, if you watch certain videos, a lot of videos on the internet are rape, non-consent. A lot of them involve a minor. And it's also the way that they name certain videos and the content that's in it. So if something says cookie toddler, or if something says like stepdad screws step son, right. You know, if you're constantly watching videos like that, or if it's like a teacher and a schoolgirl, like if you're constantly watching videos like that, those ideas start to kind of fester in your brain. And there's a reason why traffickers and pimps and predators, like, they all get ideas from somewhere, and porn is one of those things.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Consider Before Consuming. Consider Before Consuming is brought to you by Fight the New Drug. Fight the New Drug is a non-religious and non-legislative organization that exists to provide individuals the opportunity to make an informed decision regarding pornography by raising awareness on its harmful effects using only science, facts, and personal accounts. If you want to learn more about today's guest and the conversation we had, you can check out the links included with this episode. Again, big thanks to you for listening to this conversation. As you go about your day, we invite you to increase your self-awareness, look both ways, check your blind spots, and consider before consuming.
If you've been enjoying listening to Consider Before Consuming, consider signing up to give $1 a month to support our efforts. Your contribution, whatever the amount, can make a significant difference in our efforts to educate individuals on the impacts of pornography. Sign up to give just $1 every month at ftnd.org/giveone. That's ftnd.org/give in the number one.
Can I be honest for a second? A lot of people who listen to this podcast already know they want to quit porn. That's not the problem. The problem is doing it consistently, when no one's watching, when it's difficult, when it's late, when you're stressed. Instead of just relying on willpower, rely on our friends at Relay. Relay gives you structure, tools, support, connection. So you're not fighting alone and starting over every week. If that sounds like what you've been missing, check it out at ftnd.org/joinrelay.
Struggling with compulsive sexual behavior or betrayal trauma can feel isolating, not just for individuals, but for partners and families too. But healing is possible, and you don't have to navigate it alone. From June 25th through the 27th in Nashville, Tennessee, the Hope for Healing Conference brings together individuals in recovery, partners, couples, and professionals for 3 days of expert insights, meaningful conversations, and real connection. You'll hear from experienced voices in the field, gain practical tools for healing, and connect with others who understand what this journey can look like. Whether you're seeking support personally or professionally, this space is designed to meet you where you are. To learn more or register, visit csbdhopeforhealing.org and use code PODCAST25 for 25% off.
Here at Fight the New Drug, we talk a lot about the impact pornography can have on mental health, relationships, sexual health, and the world around us. And if you've felt that impact personally, it's important to know this. You're not alone. That's why Relay exists. Relay is an app designed to give you real support as you work toward lasting change. It connects you with a small, private group of people who understand what you're going through, people who show up when it matters. Relay isn't about shame or judgment. It's about accountability, encouragement, and learning how to move forward together. And if anonymity matters to you, Relay has you covered. No names, just support. If you're ready to stop doing this alone, try Relay for free today at ftnd.org/joinrelay.